I'm about to embark on a very large project of removing the entire bottom floor of my house.
And I'm interested in taking the carpeting out of my condo and replacing it with hardwood or bamboo.
I'm Lisa Rothman, and you're listening to Chew On This, fresh ideas made to order. Today, home improvements, how to make them without harming the environment or your bank account. I'm surrounded by 10 food trucks at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco.
That looks amazing. What is it?
I'm eating a crab cake salad. It's really warm and yummy.
Oh my God.
It's over this really great bed of lettuce that's been really fresh, and I think it's organic.
Oh my God.
And there's some sweet dressing on top of it.
Oh my God, I mean.
Yeah, it's delicious.
I'm getting one of those. Coming up, environmentally responsible home improvements. Welcome to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. 10 food trucks serving up lunch and dinner 7 days a week. Today, how do we make home improvements that are both economically and environmentally friendly? Kat Chang is a landscape and architectural designer. Welcome.
I'm happy to be here.
Aaron Ursch is an environmentalist, engineer, and cabinet maker. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Lisa Togerson is an architectural designer and the owner of LT Design. Welcome.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having us.
Kat Chang, let's start with you. Many home improvement projects are cosmetic, but you were involved in a really high-stakes project in West Oakland because the lead in the soil around people's homes was making them sick. Would you tell us about that project?
Many, many properties throughout the United States built before 1978 have lead in the paint in them, and that lead leaches out into the soil, and if you garden and you don't follow best management practices around that, you could be ingesting lead, and that's particularly difficult for little children whose brains are under development. And so we were looking for safe, effective, inexpensive ways with the US EPA that homeowners could remediate and treat their soil to make it safer.
And one thing that was unique about the project was that it involved something as simple as fish meal, right?
Yes, actually we were looking to pulverized fish bones, which is a byproduct of the Alaskan fishing industry. They don't actually know what to do with their fish bones. So they sent them down here, and we utilized a jobs training program to dig it into the soil in the neighborhood that we were looking at. So one of the nice things about it is it was a local solution that utilized local use in the area, gave them job training skills, and it utilized a natural substance, which is fishbone, just digging it into the soil and then putting what we consider a green cover and re-landscaping on top of that.
Aaron Ursch, you've put a lot of time into figuring out the most affordable and environmental way to do home improvement projects. But lots of do-it-yourselfers, they're squeezing in these projects on the weekends. Where can they go to get some quick tips?
Many local municipalities, especially here in the Bay Area, have gone to a lot of effort to bring a lot of important information about different kinds of paints, different kinds of materials that you can use in your home improvements. And I think that's probably the first place to start. But more than anything else, I think I really want to say, when you're trying to do something environmentally, it doesn't always come out that it's the cheapest option. And so one of the messages I want to present today is that when you're looking at doing home improvements or any kind of building renovation that involves some concern for the environment, you want to look at value. You want to look at the long-term life cycle of the project that you're putting in and not just look at the cheapest alternative that has some sort of promotional greenwash that makes you think you're doing the right thing while you're saving money. But you really want to look at the entire life cycle of the product that you're putting in, how you're going to save money over the long term, and how it's going to affect the environment by not having to have it be redone in a couple of years.
Lisa Togerson, when you meet with clients, what are some of the challenges that they face in making home improvements that are environmentally friendly?
Well, Lisa, I think it's really important to find a contractor who is on board with your green project. Because a lot of people in the construction industry and the design industry, such as ourselves, are sometimes the most conservative people because we've been doing things a certain way for 20 years. It's a bit hard to change and try new innovative techniques. But getting a green builder on board would be a way to overcome that challenge.
Let's have a round of applause for our experts. Green building means using materials that last and protect people's health. And it means reducing the amount of energy and water that buildings consume. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco, a city that's so green, it won an award from the United Nations for having the best building policies of any city in the world. San Francisco is committed to getting to 100% renewable energy by 2020. Buildings account for more than half of greenhouse gas emissions, so the city requires people to do an audit of their home's energy and water use before selling. Chew on This correspondent Charlie Mintz visited two programs that teach unemployed and underemployed San Franciscans green construction skills.
In recovery circles, it's a cliche that you have to hit rock bottom before you can come back up.
I had 26 charges when I got arrested, and I already had like 12 here and like 10 up in Washington. I mean, for me, this is it. If I can't make this work for me right now, then I'm going to grow old in a prison cell, you know?
Altogether, Aaron Buchanan guesses he spent 8 years of his life in jail, and many more addicted to meth and other drugs. He's broken into people's houses to steal their things. He's broken his back jumping out of a third-story window. Today, though, he's been clean for 17 months, and he's hoping he can break into a new trade.
You know, I'm doing this for me, but, you know, I want to make my family proud, you know. And, you know, I don't want them worrying about whether I'm laying dead in a ditch anymore, you know what I mean?
Buchanan is sitting in an industrial garage that's been turned into a classroom. All around us are carpentry projects in various stages of completion. In the middle of the room are two rows of desks seating 19 men and women with stories a lot like Buchanan's. They're here today to begin a 3.5-month training class offered by a nonprofit called Asian Neighborhood Design. At the end of it, they'll have the skills to get green construction jobs, specifically installing solar panels.
Just because a kid has tattoos and he has a rough background does not mean he doesn't understand what 16 on center means, and doesn't mean he can't read a tape measure and do good quality work.
What does 16 on center mean?
16 on center is when you're framing. It's to make sure everything is square and everything's lined up.
Jamie Brewster is site manager at Asian Neighborhood Design's Employment Training Center, upstairs from the classroom. His office walls are decorated with pictures of his daughter, now 7 years old. Right behind his desk, though, is a very different kind of picture. A black and white photo of a young man looking defiant.
Keeps me focused. Anytime I feel like I might be going backwards or slipping up, I just turn around and look at that, and that's a great reminder.
What does it say?
It's just my California Department of Corrections inmate ID card. And that was the fifth and final time that I was incarcerated back in 1999.
Brewster says the problems involved drugs. Back then, he was a professional skateboarder, but he ended up going to prison 5 times.
That was actually my mom's birthday, that date. Yeah, so it's a great reminder for me. It's important that people understand that you can go here and still end up where I'm at.
Brewster's made it to their side. He's been sober over 10 years, and now he helps people like Aaron Buchanan turn their lives around too. Solar is good business. It's still small. Only about 120,000 Americans work in the industry, but it's adding jobs at about 6 times the national rate. Solar jobs are also often non-union, which means lower wages, but also an easier and less complicated path to employment.
No offense to the unions, because they've done great things for the United States, but here in San Francisco, it's a lot easier to get them involved in a non-union job because there's less hoops to jump through. The prerequisites are less, and oftentimes the employers are a little easier to deal with.
Brewster's been placing people in solar jobs for almost 4 years, and he says he usually finds work for about 3/4 of each graduating class. Last year, he did even better and placed 17 of 18 graduates in jobs paying about $15 an hour. This is the kind of program people call a win-win. It's a ladder up for people who've hit rock bottom, and it's helping San Francisco reduce its carbon emissions. But carbon isn't the only toxin San Francisco has to worry about. Residents are finding jobs battling all kinds of pollutants. A few miles from Asian Neighborhood Design in the Mission, Myrna Melgar had another idea for turning environmental hazard into economic opportunity.
It was a double whammy.
Myrna Melgar is deputy director of Mission Economic Development Corporation, or META. She also recently helped start another organization under META's umbrella, Lead Free LLC. The double whammy she mentioned is Lead Free's twofold mission. First, to clean up the lead that's poisoning children in some of San Francisco's poorest communities. And second, to help low-income residents in the Mission District, many of them housekeepers and janitors, find good jobs doing it. Lead Free has only been up and running for a year, but so far it's cleaned up about half a dozen homes and helped about a dozen people begin the transition to lead cleanup jobs.
So it seemed like a natural thing to address an environmental justice issue by providing jobs to folks who are low income, who need jobs.
We know lead dust is bad. In children, it can create a whole host of developmental disabilities. Some research has even linked national crime trends to the amount of lead in the atmosphere. In short, it's bad news. Worse news is that it's present in almost any house built before 1978. That's more than 90% of San Francisco's homes. The mayor's office of housing administers federal grants to help clean up lead, and it's partnered with Lead Free to handle emergency cases. There are also cleanup subsidies available to low-income families with children. They can hire whoever they want to do the work, but Lead Free is hoping they'll hire them.
One of the trainees that I have right now is a single mom of a little six-year-old girl. And prior to this, she cleaned houses whenever she could get one.
That's Jenny Fontenot. She's worked as both a social worker and a lead remediation specialist. And she helps train people through Lead Free. Her trainees learn the idea isn't to get all the lead out of a house, but instead to make it safe. That can mean encasing lead beneath special barriers, that's called encapsulating, or removing a particularly toxic window or door. What works best depends on the situation, and there's a lot to learn. Most of the new trainees are still just getting started.
We're going to be training them, sending them to state certified, to get state certification, and hopefully get them good jobs.
Trainees at Lead Free, just like the trainees at Asian Neighborhood Design, are headed for non-union jobs. Still, the Environmental Protection Agency offers a variety of certifications for lead cleanup, all the way up to supervisor. Earning all of them can take up to a year, but it's worth it. Just like in solar, a trained lead cleanup worker makes about $15 an hour. Again, Myrna Melgar.
That was the essence of why the program was created in the first place, because the wage differential between just cleaning houses and what somebody can earn doing lead dust cleaning is quite significant.
It's a shame there isn't a nicer way of saying killing two birds with one stone. But solving two problems with one job is a good start. In San Francisco, I'm Charlie Mintz.
You're listening to Chew on This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We're talking about making home improvements with the health of the environment as a priority. Our experts are contractor and cabinet maker Aaron Ersch, who serves on the board of Asian Neighborhood Design, which we just heard about, Kat Chang, a landscape and architectural designer, and Lisa Togerson, an architectural designer. When you think about all the home improvement projects you could do, cost is one of the first considerations. What should you tackle first? We're going to find out what construction activities have the biggest impact on the health of the environment. We've got 19 different construction activities you could tackle, each one represented by a piece of paper taped to the picnic table we're sitting at here at the Soma Street Food Park. The people here are going to place a tick mark on the four construction activities they believe have the biggest environmental impact. The construction activities are
general conditions, project size, demolition, excavation, i.e. soil removal, concrete foundation, metals, structural steel frame and flashing, wood, rough framing, finished carpentry, deck, stucco siding, insulation, roofing, doors, windows, paint, interior and exterior, sheetrock, tile tub surrounds, cabinets, counter, flooring, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, plumbing, electrical, appliances, exterior landscaping.
What are you mulling over as you decide the top four construction activities that have the biggest impact on the environment?
Impact on the surrounding soils, the perhaps runoff from any kind of work being done. I chose demolition because I'm older buildings, who knows what was used in them previously that'll end up in our topsoil.
What went into your choices?
Insulation is very important to me. I'm going to check that right now.
Are you currently involved in a home renovation project?
At this stage, I'm just thinking about it. I have a kitchen that kind of drives me crazy a bit, so I've been getting books and mostly just reading so far. But I was hoping to kind of learn a little more today and kind of build piece by piece.
So as you look at these 19 different construction activities, which four are you? What's going into your decision about which four have the biggest impact?
Well, the house was built in the mid-1950s, and so there's been some work by previous owners, and I don't really have a whole lot of information about what kind of materials they used, or probably, like, you know, some of this is in the 70s or 60s, you know, who knows.
So it's hard to figure out which four might be important because you're not quite sure what went into the building of the house in the first place?
Exactly, yeah. It's a little bit of kind of a mystery tour, kind of figuring out what was in there. And so, you know, trying to do it in the right way without, like, this thing kind of expanding into just this gigantic, endless project.
What did the audience here at the Soma Street Food Park rank as the four construction activities that have the greatest impact on the environment?
Our audience chose paint, which was also interior and exterior use of paint, insulation, appliances, and counters with their surrounds, and cabinets.
And what are the four construction activities that do have the biggest impact on the environment?
Let me first say that many of these activities or many of these aspects of the construction projects are interactive. They relate to each other. Exterior doors and windows and insulation all work together to have an impact. It's a complex system. So even though we divided it this way because it's typical in the industry, it actually, many of these are mutually modifying. And I also want to say that in terms of impact on the environment, it's not very easy to be specific and say one is more than the other. Many of these things are very project specific. If you're in a project that has a lot of contamination, a brownfield development or something like this, that the way in which you treat your excavation and your project is going to have much more impact than anything else that you do.
What is a brownfield?
A brownfield development is typically an inner city former industrial site that's being converted into a commercial or a residential use. And so the former industrial site oftentimes will have a variety of toxic chemicals in it. In terms of what has the most significant impact, and this is somewhat debated, but by far and away, the general conditions and the project size have the most impact. Regardless of the other aspects that go into the project, the size makes a huge difference. When we hear about these 10,000 square foot, quote, green buildings built by a Hollywood actress, it's really kind of a joke. If you're at 10,000 square feet, no matter how you build this thing, you're going to use up a huge amount of energy. You're going to have to heat it and cool it. The trucks coming in and out, bringing the stuff, there's no way to overcome that impact. Along with that, how you site the building, which is also part of the conditions in the project size, in terms of its solar gain, its openness, its ability to create passive energy and heat, make it much bigger difference than many of these other aspects.
I think one important point to make is about insulation.
Lisa Togerson with LT Design.
It's one of the most cost-effective things a homeowner can do to their home to make it perform better. In terms of saving money down the road, having a house that's well insulated, you'll save on heating and cooling. The folks in the Midwest and the eastern states already know this, but us folks in California are just figuring it out and starting to insulate our homes over the last 20, 30 years.
Kat Chang?
I would also like to say that demolition, if you're thinking about a renovation project, can you keep the size of it down to a minimum? Reduce the amount of materials that are being taken out of the home? And quite possibly some of those older materials can be renovated just as easily. They could be stripped of their paint safely and then reinstalled back into the home. One of the best things that you can do that often can be low in cost is exterior landscaping. Placing trees or large shrubs in such a way to create shading and to keep the solar heat gain from entering your home.
What does solar heat gain mean?
Solar heat gain is the heat that comes into your house from the sun, from windows that are primarily facing the south and west facades.
Aaron Ersch.
Along with the potential for energy savings on heat gain is also the long-term water usage. When you put in the exterior landscape, you have to water that until you're ready to let it die. And if you're putting in big lawns or something that requires a lot of water, it has a long-term environmental consequence.
I'd like to thank my panel, Aaron Ersch, Kat Chang, and Lisa Togerson. We'll be back after this. You're listening to Chew On This. If you're just joining us, we're finding out how to make home improvements in an environmentally responsible way. Our experts are landscape and architectural designer Kat Chang, architectural designer Lisa Togerson, and Aaron Ersch, a general contractor, engineer, environmentalist, and cabinet maker. Now it's time for us to get our questions answered. But before we do,
listeners should understand that today's experts are suggesting information which will give you direction in obtaining home improvement advice from your own contractor or architect. Lisa Togerson, LT Design, Kat Chang, Aaron Ersch, EcoCraft Cabinetry, Chew On This, and KALW are not responsible for any injury or damage that may result from a home improvement plan or project that was inspired or prompted by listening to this program.
Now it's time for our questions. I want to be first. One of the reasons I fell in love with the Victorian house I live in is because the previous owner had great taste. Red maple tree outside the bay window, original light fixtures throughout, Mexican tile countertops. But the flooring in the kitchen is a disaster. Beige. It's beige with brown stripes. Ugh.
Lisa, I have a question for you. Is that sheet vinyl that's on that floor?
Yes.
One of the things that you can do to increase your air quality inside your home is to make sure that sheet vinyl is removed from it and that a better flooring alternative is put in place. Sheet vinyl is one of the least expensive flooring types, so that oftentimes people find that to be very cost-effective way of renewing their flooring. However, it's one of the worst offenders in terms of releasing volatile organic compounds into the air. And if you have young children, they're actually closer to that flooring. And so they're breathing that in at greater amounts than adults are.
So I can actually justify replacing this floor even though it's not ripped or anything?
Correct.
Well, it's a little bit too bad that it was put in there in the first place because it'll be in a landfill for the next couple thousand years. But there's alternatives such as a product called marmoleum that is basically the linoleum of our grandmother's childhoods. Marmoleum's a product I like to use a lot. It's made out of natural materials like wood pulp and linseed oil. And I'm not plugging them because I work for them or anything, but it's just a great natural product, no off-gassing. And it'll degrade if you take it out in 25 years. It'll degrade in a landfill. So it also comes in a lot of bright colors. Sounds like you don't like the beige in your kitchen, but it comes in dozens of colors.
Can it get wet? Because in the kitchen, I do have little kids, and they're spilling things all the time.
It can. I mean, it's something you don't want to have standing water for days on end. But as long as you clean it up within the day, you'll be fine.
I'm going to try that. You're listening to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. Today, we're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. We're learning about how to make home improvements that are environmentally and economically sustainable. Let's get some of the audience's questions answered.
Hi, my name's Marilyn. What is the most, in the order of priority, of the improvements you can make that have the best what we call ROI, return on investment. What can I do in my to my house first and foremost that would make my house worth more, that would double that money for me when I want to sell it?
Kat Chang. In my practice, one of the things that I find that happens over and over again in terms of return on investment is protecting your investment to begin with. Here in San Francisco Bay Area, we live in a seismically active area. If your foundation has not been replaced, I would consider having somebody take a look at that. The last thing that you really want to have to deal with after a major earthquake event would be to repair your home.
You know, you could install a solar hot water heater because it's one of the solar energy techniques that actually pays itself back within a few years. It's much faster than photovoltaics.
I did that. We did that. But I was just kind of curious between like some of the things that we listed out here on the paper. Heating versus windows, that's an environmental thing as well. But in terms of investment, just in terms of putting the money out there and then selling it, what's going to be the thing that's going to be like, this home has this? You know, is it stainless steel appliances? Is it central heat? You know, what kinds of things do you think, you know, as an investment, just as an investment, that's all.
I think there's a lot of buyers out there that will pay a premium for a house that's a green designed house, that they want it to be ultra insulated. I think it's a really good investment to set up the system so that the monthly utility bills are very low. In other words, a really highly efficient furnace and super insulated shell. So that would be a way to market your house.
Aaron?
I think that question is something that changes year to year and region to region. There's a couple of magazines, Journal of Light Construction, Remodeling Magazine, and every year they put out the top 10 return on investment, the bottom 10 return on investment. So if you're really interested in that, I would do two things. One is I would just, you know, look online to find out one of those more recent surveys. And the other thing is talk to your local real estate agent. Everything is very geographically specific, but talking to somebody who's local, who sells houses in your area, a good experienced agent will be able to walk in and immediately tell you what to do. And it's, I don't think there's any overall or uber answer. It's just a matter of finding out what works in your neighborhood and what the current trends are. It used to be jacuzzis were big, now they're down.
Hello, thank you everyone. My name is Louis Dorsey. And I'm about to embark on a very large project of removing the entire bottom floor of my house. The reason is the foundation is crumbling. The house was built in 1926. I've looked at a construction engineer person already, and I've looked at a contractor. But my basic question is there someone I can hire to oversee my project to help me get an idea about how to go down the right road? Because my idea is to be green, and also the space has a garage, a large 12 by 20 room that I use as a bedroom, a bathroom, and a small room I use as an office, and I want to redo those rooms back into the same configuration with an overseer.
Kat Chang?
I think that in a lot of ways, one of the things that could bring value to your project is to work with an architectural designer or an architect, and they can act in good faith as your advocate, as you're starting to interview the different contractors. They can help you frame your reference questions and help you also to schedule and map out the renovation so that it's done in a consistent way with a consistent time schedule, and to help you manage your expectations around that. Also, if it's large enough, there's certainly permitting requirements, and they can help you with that as well.
Aaron Ursh.
I would also add that there has been a growing influence of green contractor associations. I think in the Bay Area there's one called Build It Green. I'm not sure if they're state or national yet, but they have different consultants that you can hire that can actually help manage the environmental impact of your project. So I think... Build It Green in the Bay Area, and then I think I agree with Kat. Finding an architect that's got a good, strong background in green construction can also help.
Lisa Togerson.
You know, since you're embarking on such a large project at this time, it also could be a good time to do an energy audit of your home and kind of see how your home is performing in terms of how much energy it uses every year. And a lot of municipalities have free or lower cost energy audits that you can take advantage of and find, and they'll give you recommendations as to, you know, how much insulation or what you could do with windows or that kind of thing. It might be a little extra information to help you on your project.
Thank you.
All the good ideas our experts are coming up with are on our website, chewonthisradio.com. We'll get more of your questions about home improvement answered after this. You're listening to Chew On This. We're at San Francisco's Soma Street Food Park. I'm Lisa Rothman. We take a challenge people face in their daily lives and ask experts how to handle it. Today, how do we make home improvements that preserve the environment and our finances? Our experts are general contractor and co-owner of EcoCraft Cabinetry, Aaron Ursch, landscape and architectural designer, Kat Chang, and architectural designer and owner of LT Design, Lisa Togerson. Let's get some more questions answered.
Hi, my name's Rebecca Chigas. Do you guys have any recommendations for some sustainable, affordable, blown-in insulation for a house with lath and plaster walls?
Yes.
Aaron Ursch.
So blowing in insulation in a lath and plaster wall, it can be a little bit tricky because of the way in which the plaster sticks through the lath. So I think my first recommendation on that is make sure you get an experienced contractor and have them walk you through the project and talk to you about what's going to be entailed. Because it's something that a lot of the cavities in the walls only get filled up halfway. Sometimes the studs are kind of thin and it's difficult to get a good fill, and that's important. So you want to make sure you get a contractor who you feel that you can talk to and that you feel confident that they've actually done a complete job rather than somebody who's just going to come in, drill a bunch of holes in the wall, blast the stuff in there, and leave. That, I think that's probably the most critical thing. The next thing, this is true of so many environmental products, but you know, things are emerging every day in terms of different quality of products. There's some insulation out there that's made out of recycled blue jeans that people have liked. There's some fiberglass stuff that's still pretty good. There's some cotton bat stuff that's still pretty good. You know, every day stuff comes out. You know, a good reference is to find a green contractor and find somebody who is familiar with the products in your local area and let them make a recommendation on, you know, what the options are. I know, you know, what I would use here in San Francisco or Berkeley or Oakland, but in terms of a national audience, I think, you know, you've got to find something local, look for a green home improvement center, and see what the options are.
Lisa Togerson?
There are also some expanding foam products that is sprayed on, like in your attic, and now they're starting to make them without the chlorofluorocarbons of yesteryear, so they're a lot more environmentally friendly, and they're really good because they'll get every little crevice. It's hard to miss a spot, so that's another product.
Kat Chang. Here in the San Francisco Bay Area, one of the things that we have with our wonderful Victorian housing stock is sort of what might be left over from a different era where we had big double doors or sliding doors. One of the things to watch out for when you're blowing cellulose in is that those tracks often allow the cellulose to continue to fall out And so you'll be picking it up all the time. And I've had clients be very sort of frustrated with that choice. So talk to your contractor about all the different possibilities and listen to their recommendations and ask around a little bit too.
Thank you so much.
Hi, my name is Rocky Yazzie. I was wondering if someone's embarking on like renovating a new home or a home or building a new home. Do you guys encourage the homeowners to like change out the water filtration system? And if so, what methods would they go about doing so?
Lisa Togerson?
I think there's a lot of impurities in the water, so it is a good idea to have a whole house water filtration system. I think they're probably a little pricey. It's not the least expensive thing you could do. I haven't had a lot of clients do it, so I know it's not as popular as it maybe should be. I mean, you could do very simple things, such as put in a chlorine remover on your shower head. So have a low flow shower head with a chlorine remover. That'll help you when you're bathing. You could also just get a Brita filter and do that for your drinking water. Those would be a lot less money. Has anyone else here installed water filtration systems?
Kat Chang.
I haven't worked with a client yet to do so, but one of the things that I often counsel my clients who are purchasing a home that's older is if they have the old galvanized iron pipes in their home, to consider replacing them with copper. Now, that is not an inexpensive endeavor, and it can break the bank sometimes, quite frankly, but if they're thinking of having young children and babies in the house, the lead that's leaching from the old solder and also all of the rust particles from the old galvanized pipes, that's something that is really important to think about in terms of removing. Typically, to replumb a house is anywhere from $15,000 to $25,000, so you can see how that is a huge item. So some of the things that Lisa is suggesting can at least help for a short period of time, I believe.
Aaron Ersch?
I agree with both Lisa and Kat, but I would just back it up a little bit and say that when you're looking at domestic water processes and water delivery, you know, start off looking at the whole system. So in my town, Berkeley, we have East Bay Mud, typically pretty good water, pretty good quality water from the district. There are many, many, many areas in California and throughout the country who have relatively poor water quality distribution systems. And they just don't have good access to clean Sierra water like we do. So start there. Then the next thing, like Kat said, how's it getting from the water district into your house? Are they old galvanized pipes? Are they new copper pipes? In some cases, you know, we run into stuff that's even in plastic piping. So you need to look at all of those things. And I would say you can get the stuff tested. You can get people who will give you water quality analysis on this, or take samples of your water down to your water district and say, you know, can you give me a chemical readout on what I've got in here?
Hi, my name is Pasha DeWald, and I'm interested in taking the carpeting out of my condo and replacing it with hardwood or bamboo. And I'm curious about the environmental and fiscal impact, hardwood versus bamboo, as far as durability, wearability, that sort of thing.
Well, I found that certain bamboo products are really soft, so you've got to be careful. The last time that I had specified bamboo flooring, I took a lot of samples and actually used like my keys to sort of mar it up and see which one was the strongest. And then some of them were really soft. They just marked up all over the place. So be careful of that and do a lot of testing of the samples.
I'd like to speak to that. One of the things about bamboo is it is a very renewable resource. So if you do find a product out there that meets your approval with the key test, I would use that key test. That would be a good choice. Hardwoods can also be really great. These days we are seeing what we call engineered flooring products. And so it's a different core with a veneer on top. Some of those can work for a long time if they have the proper sealant on them. There's such a finish that's actually ceramic, but it's clear. And they do use them in commercial applications. However, I do believe that the older sort of style of hardwood flooring where it's solid stock What's nice about that is they can be refinished over time, so they have a longer life cycle.
Lisa?
Also remember, whether you're choosing hardwood or bamboo, to look for an FSC certified product, which is the Forest Stewardship Council, and they just make sure that the wood has come from a sustainably harvested source. Also, with anything that's a laminated product like bamboo, make sure that it's formaldehyde free, because that will be off-gassing into your house. I don't know if you have small children, but it can be bad.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, we'll get more home improvement ideas.
This is a house that Jack built, y'all. Remember this house. This was the land that he worked by hand. It was the dream of an upright man. There was a room that was filled with love. It was a love that I was proud of. This is the life that he planned. All the love, the same old love. In the house that Jack built.
The house that Jack built.
You're listening to Chew On This. We're talking about environmentally responsible home improvements. It's time for Think Fast. Home improvement projects usually involve painting something. How do you choose the right color? The paint color names on those strips you get at the hardware store are no help at all. What's the difference between
Maxi Teal
and
Intense Teal?
What about
Dignity Blue
and
Honorable Blue
or
Comfort Gray
and
Aloof Gray?
That one's easy. Only a snob would go with
Aloof Gray.
But what if I like
Aloof Gray
more than
Comfort Gray?
What does that make me? Aloof? Comfortable? Here's today's challenge. We're surrounded by 10 brightly painted food trucks here at the Soma Street Food Park. Choose one that you like. If you worked for a paint company, what would you name the paint color on that truck? Think fast. Time's up for Think Fast. People here are turning in their ideas for the name of the paint color on the food truck of their choice. At the end of the show, our three home improvement experts, Kat Chang, Aaron Ersch, and Lisa Togerson, will select three winners. You're probably wondering, what will they win? What's today's meal of fortune? Crab cake salad from the Fish Tank food truck. Let's hear how the Fish Tank food truck combines seafood and environmental sustainability into a delicious meal.
Well, I think it all started with the fact that I'm born and raised San Franciscan, and we're surrounded on three sides by water. So it's only kind of natural that we would use the resource that we have most abundant to us, and that's the ocean. I like to be really, really hands-on, and I go down to Fisherman's Wharf. It's not so much a vendor versus vendor. It's friends that I've been doing business with for many, many years, and I feel confident and secure that I'm going to be getting sustainably caught wild products. My name is Steve Scarabosio, and I'm the owner of the Fish Tank truck. Yeah, it's very, very hustle and bustle. There's a lot of things going on. You know, it starts very early in the morning. The guys get down there at 4 o'clock in the morning. I try to get down there between 6 and 6:30 in the morning so that I can get the freshest, best. Even though it's just going off of my food truck, it's got to be the best. And 51. That is our papaya mango salsa, inspired by my wife, who actually created the recipe. And it's very simple. It's papayas, mangoes, jalapeno peppers, a little cilantro, salt and pepper, and lime juice. So it's just made with a lot of love, and that's, you know, that's the key to everything.
Yes, I have that.
I'll have beans.
Dave, and I also have some white beans. You want some custom white beans?
Well, you know, eventually, hopefully this will take off, and I'll need to get another truck, and who knows down the road. My nephew is learning to be a chef. One of my other nephews is working on a food truck right now. So, you know, being that we don't have any children of our own, who knows, one day we'll just have a whole little school of fish tanks.
You can take me down to a restaurant.
You're listening to Chew On This. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. Today, we're talking about environmentally responsible home improvements. Our experts are Lisa Togerson, the owner of LT Design. When Lisa works on a project, she tries to reuse, conserve, and retrofit what's already there. Kat Chang is a landscape and architectural designer. And Aaron Ersch brings his decades of experience as an environmentalist to his work as a general contractor and cabinet maker. His cabinets are affordable and don't compromise air quality or support destructive forestry practices. Let's get some more questions answered.
Hi, my name's Pat. Thanks very much for doing this. I have a house that has radiant heating, which I think is great. And I'm thinking about kind of replacing some of the it's like a carpeting part of the house. And I'm wondering, would you have any advice about what kind of flooring materials kind of works well with radiant heating that doesn't sort of counteract what works really well?
Well, I think tile would be a great choice for your house because it's inexpensive and it's wonderful with radiant heat. It retains the heat and feels great on your feet.
Kat?
Hardwood is also something that you could use with radiant heating. Just make sure that it's acclimated in the house before it's installed. And that means it needs to be stored within the house for about 3 weeks.
Aaron, do you have anything to add?
I'm not sure it's the most environmentally best option, but I've got a lot of clients who are pouring thin layers of concrete on their floor. And they're polishing it and waxing it. And they get, you know, a good solid floor that, much like tile, will retain the heat once the system's turned on, and it creates a thermal mass.
Can I say one more thing about the concrete? One of the advantages of using concrete over the radiant floor is that it actually provides a lot of soundproofing. So if you have multiple stories in your home, you could have that man cave downstairs or the place where the kids beat on the drums, and you won't hear them as much.
Hi, my name is Gita, and I rent an apartment in Oakland. And my question is, the apartment I live in is really drafty, and I don't have the option to change the windows out to make it any better. I'm wondering what's the best thing that I can do to keep my apartment warm and cozy without actually changing the windows.
Well, Gita, do you have window coverings, like curtains?
I have curtains in the living room, yes.
That'll help a lot, but you can also see if the air is coming from around the windows, you know. A $5 can of caulking can actually help you keep the wind from coming in around the sides of the windows, so that's one option that's really inexpensive. The other thing as a renter is, and I know my brother did this for years, is you can buy this film from your general hardware store and put it on your window, and I think you use a blow dryer, which makes the film stretch out and virtually creates a dual pane window where you used to have a single pane window. You don't really see it because it's clear, and once you have done the whole process, you can see right through it. I think that's also really inexpensive, and a lot of renters are doing that.
That's great. Thank you.
Aaron?
The caulking idea is a good idea, but in order to make caulking look good, it actually is a little tricky. And so you might just first try to identify where the drafts are coming from, and then call a painting contractor or a painting handyman, and they apply boxes of caulk on a weekly basis. And a good painter can come through, caulk it, make it look nice, and maybe even hit it with a little bit of paint, and might solve your problem and look okay in the end.
Kat Chang? At the same time, something that might be able to be addressed is the weather stripping around doors as well, and that doesn't cost very much to upgrade.
Okay, wonderful.
All the good ideas our experts have come up with about home improvements are on our website, chewonthisradio.com. Aaron Ersch, co-owner of EcoCraft Cabinetry and board member with Asian Neighborhood Design, Kat Chang, landscape and architectural designer, and Lisa Togerson, architectural designer and owner of LT Design, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today.
Thank you.
Our time together is drawing to a close, which means that we've got some delicious crab cake salad from the Fish Tank food truck to give away. At this very moment, our experts are adjudicating the names people came up with for the paint color on the food truck of their choice. And the winners are...
Nuclear Green, Lisa Gomez. Faux Green, Tina Silvestre. Squid Blue, Chris Chigas.
Squid Blue is for the fish tank food truck. Faux Green is for the Little Green Cyclo food truck, which serves Vietnamese food. The word faux is spelled P-H-O, and it's referring to the noodle soup from Vietnam, which is actually pronounced pho. Congratulations, Lisa, Tina, and Chris. Come on up and claim your crab cake salads. They won the Meal of Fortune with skill, but you can also win with luck. People here at the Soma Street Food Park have placed their names in the official Chew on This picnic basket and selected at random. The lucky winners are...
Louis Dorsey.
Rocky Yazzie.
Rebecca Chigas.
Our production engineer is Jim Bennett. Matt Martin, the general manager of KALW, is our advising producer. Ashley Ann Krigbaum is our outreach coordinator and production associate. Maggie Ballard is our creative consultant, and Marilyn Pittman is our on-site director. Our mic mavens today are Erica Bridgman and Alyssa Kapnick. The sound editor is Eric Wayne. Brent Norton composed the theme music. Justine Choi, Melissa Fries, Luis Granados, Julieta Kusnir, and Connie Chan Wang are the show's idea advisors. Special thanks to our audience here for asking such great questions. And thanks to the owner of the Soma Street Food Park, Carlos Muela, and to everyone at KALW's Cross Currents. How are you enjoying your crab cake salad?
Oh my God.
It's that good?
Oh my God.
What do you like about it?
Oh my God, I mean, this is good. This is fresh, it's light, you know.
What do you think about your meal of fortune?
It is so yummy. It is exactly what I wanted. And I'm enjoying it.
Those greens are organic.
Oh, wonderful. I love organic.
What do you think?
Delicious.
What makes it delicious?
The flavors and the texture of the crab cakes. It's good. They're light.
Do you like crab?
Yeah, I like crab. The sauce is good, and I like the fact that they're organic greens.
Go to chewonthisradio.com for information about upcoming episodes, more home improvement suggestions, and a place to share your own successes and challenges. I'm Lisa Rothman. We've heard a lot of great ideas today. Until next time, try one out and let us know how it goes.